I apologize for the late start today. We're going to get right to it. We are in New York City, as you can see here. We've had some technical issues. Great Adam Carolla joins me today. Obviously, I think people that know me know him. Let's get right to it.
Our laws as it pertains to substances are draconian and bizarre.
The psychopath started this way.
He was an alcoholic because of social media and pornography, PTSD,
love addiction,
fentanyl and heroin. Ridiculous.
I'm a doctor for sake. Where the hell do you think I learned that?
I'm just saying.
You go to treatment before you kill people.
I am a clinician. I observe things about these chemicals.
Let's just deal with what's real.
We used to get these calls on Loveline all the time.
Educate adolescents and to prevent and to treat.
If you have trouble you can't stop and you want to help stop it, I can help.
I got a lot to say. I got a lot more to say.
Let's talk about aging, because everyone wants to know how to slow it down. For almost a decade, I've been taking a healthy aging supplement called True Niagen. This supplement boosts NAD. That's something that cells can't live without. It's done with a patented form of nicotinamide riboside called NR, or Niagen. It's more efficient and more scientifically reviewed than NMN or other NAD boosters. True Niagen is truly the best way to boost NAD levels. And it's made by ChromaDex. They are the gold standard in the NAD space. Dr. Charles Brenner, the scientist who discovered the NAD-boosting potential of NR, explains.
And the center of the metabolism that allows the conversion of food into energy is NAD coenzymes. And NAD gets disturbed in the aging process. And as we're exposed to conditions of metabolic stress, Niagen, which is the form of NR that was developed by ChromaDex, is the best and the only fully legal form of NR. And this is really the gold standard for NAD boosting vitamins.
I love this product. I urge you to try it. Go to drdrew.com/trueniagen for 20% off your order. That is drdrew.com/trueniagen, TRUNIAGEN, and enter Dr. Drew at checkout, DRDREW. Enter it at checkout for 20% off.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Yes, I've literally been taking that product for 10 years. So I want to get right to Adam, though. Let's let him give all his particulars and plugs. Adam Carolla, welcome. Thank you. Sorry for the delay. You guys have been very patient at your end. How are you, man?
Good. How are you?
Good. So what I want to get to, because this is live, I thought right up front, let's talk about what's happening at the Car Museum in Reno.
I took 12 of my 13 Newman race cars, Paul Newman, that is, and agreed to do a display there for Paul Newman race cars, along with trophies and memorabilia and racing fire suits and helmets and, you know, all the plaques, all the accoutrements that go along with having the race cars. So they're going to do just a big display that is all Newman. And we're going to go out there on the 30th, I think, and open it, sort of kick off the display. And Leno's going to be in town, too. So Leno's going to come by, as well as one of the Newman daughters. And I have to think of her name. I think it's Melanie or Melissa. I must screw it up. But she's going to come out as well.
And people don't know that really Newman's sort of passion was not acting. It was race car driving, and he was quite good. And you did a documentary about it. So tell people where they can find that, too.
Melissa Newman is the name. Yeah, I'm trying to think where you can find that doc. I mean, you can probably go to adamcarolla.com and find this stuff. Maybe at chassis, chassy.com media. But you can probably just go online and look around for it. I think you should be able to find it. I think it's a very good doc. Sheds a light on Newman and his passion for racing. And it's pretty, it's got some highs and some lows. It's pretty compelling stuff. I think people would really enjoy that doc.
It is enjoyable. I thought I knew something about his heritage. The way you guys got into it, I was blown away by the entirety of the story. It's a colossal story. It's like, it's not just the guy ran a few races. I mean, this was a racing career.
Yeah, well, he had a passion, and his passion was racing, and he liked, you know, acting, and I think he liked the fact that acting could open a door for racing for him and get him rides in certain cars and invited to do things, and because he was a big name. But at a certain point, he had to drive the car, and once you drive the car, you know, the celebrity only gets you so far once you're actually alone in the car. It doesn't get you anything. So yeah. Then it all becomes a meritocracy, and it becomes about business and ability. And Paul was really good at driving and got really good at driving. And then that's all he wanted to do for, I would say the last half of his career.
And then, of course, Adam Carolla Show. You can follow Adam on Twitter, at Adam Carolla, adamcarolla.com. It's all there. Do you know who's coming up on ACS the next couple of days?
No, I have no idea. Yeah. But funny comedians, I would say.
And don't forget the Adam and Dr. Drew Show. You can get that on my website, his website. We do it 3 days a week. And we talk about a lot of stuff. I want to talk about kill switches in cars, but before I do, there was something you and I talked about today, where you were listing all the things that have sort of contributed. I was thinking about it afterwards, and I thought, I didn't remember how you framed it, whether it was contributing to how sort of malleable people's brains have become, or how prone they have been to blow in the narcissistic winds. Do you remember this? We were saying there's no religion. There's, you know, going after the difference between men and women. There's in convincing people that 2 + 2 = 5, add in some edibles and some microdosing and some screwed up families and AI. And you have sort of a recipe for a fucking mess.
Yeah. Everything's on the table. I mean, you know, you think about how would you, you know, when you're starting a cult, who are you shopping for?
Right.
No, what base? And you're not looking for kids that grew up in a religious family with an intact family and loving mom and dad and discipline and a set of morals. You know, you're looking for runaways who were victims. Oftentimes, you know, the young girl was molested by her stepfather, mom's an alcoholic, and now she's hitchhiking her way across the country, right? So Charles Manson or whomever, Jim Jones, whoever the cult leader is, swing by and pick them up. You know what I mean? Because you're going to have a very hard time if you're starting a cult with my son, because my son is very pragmatic and practical and has his head screwed on straight and got raised by responsible people. And he thinks like his dad, and good luck with convincing him. Right. But if you get the people that like to do the edibles and like to smoke the weed and, you know, like the substances, and they come from chaos and they were victimized and they don't have a religion and they're not particularly educated and maybe they've learned not to trust the government and things like that, then that's a pretty easy brain to turn out, you know? And so basically, it's not Jim Jones or Charles Manson doing it anymore. It's Anthony Fauci and CNN and all things COVID and all things Black Lives Matter and all every kooky batshit dumbo idea that every nutty congressperson has about defunding the police or how Toyota is responsible for getting their catalytic converter stolen. All these kooky, you know, the homeless or merely unhoused people. These are all kooky cult ideas that don't work on normal people, but they will work on this group. And so let's take that group and let's see if we can grow that group. Let's see if we can get people out of religion. Let's see if we can get people out of organized sports, because kooky chick think doesn't work on people who play organized sports either.
Right. Because you've had a football coach yelling at you, and you've sort of learned that, you know.
Right. So what do we want to do? So COVID comes around. Keep the liquor stores open, but shut the churches. Right. Then get rid of tackle football and give them soccer or nothing or video game. You know what I mean? Get rid of tackle football and give them a video game. Let's see if we try to convince them men are women and women are men. Let's just see if we can break them down to the point where then we can spoon feed them our bullshit and they'll be happy to lap it up. And that's what it feels like is happening to right now.
Did you see the interview that Tucker Carlson did with Chris Cuomo? You have a chance to look at that?
No, I didn't see. Drew, you're such a fucking idiot. You asked me that 4.5 hours ago. I said no. I've been doing podcasting for the last 4.5 hours. Yeah, I stopped time and I cracked a beer and I watched a 2-hour interview. All I've been doing is sitting here fucking talking all day. What do you mean? You asked me that earlier today. I haven't even left.
To be fair, I made you sit there for half an hour. I thought maybe you did something productive.
I kept waiting for you to. No, I didn't. I don't know how long the interview. You already asked me that. I said no.
Well, okay. So, he got into some interesting territory about all of this, really, sort of what the news media is doing and the kooky ideas. And he was essentially saying that something I've been saying forever is he wouldn't have done an interview with anybody unless it was negative. He only goes for the negative, and then he is then
Drew, in classic Drew sense, you brought up two entities and you keep saying he, but you won't say who you're talking about.
Chris Cuomo.
Okay, well, now we know you're not talking about Tucker Carlson.
I'm not talking about
him. Here we go. All right.
And that, by the way, was a thing you and I complain about all the time, where you imagine somebody else is in your head understanding what you're talking about. That I hope I don't make it that frequently, that particular mistake, because that is
not that frequently, but yes.
It's an obnoxious mistake. But he was saying that unless he was doing this hard-hitting interview, let's say if he was going to go interview
Chris
Tucker.
Chris Cuomo was saying,
if he were going to go interview Tucker at CNN, Chris Cuomo would have to do this hard-hitting negative interview and, you know, go get him rather than exchange ideas. And so it was interesting hearing him confirm the things that we have believed for a long time about the media, which is that there's nothing – they're just biased in a certain direction, the way it seems, and that's just how it is. And they're losing their businesses because of it. CNN's rating is shrinking. We had a major outlet today, the one I'm blanking on, I wrote it down, I think, it was Deadspin. Deadspin went out of business there, at least everyone was canceled, was fired at Deadspin. This was the group that took issue with the kid with the half red face, half black face, fan, football fan following the Redskins. And the point being is that, you know, I think people are just hungry for conversation and reality. The idea that 2 + 2 = 5 is something that I think people are, I hope at least, people are getting frustrated with. Do you agree?
Well, I don't know if they are frustrated with it. I suspect they are. I just think they're going somewhere else, you know, like, you know. Whenever I hear now, there's a study that suggests, I'm like, yeah, okay, is there? What study? Yeah. Who wrote the study? Tell me who wrote the study, because I don't believe it. Whatever. Yeah. It's like, if there's literally a medical study that goes against what I think, I don't even trust it anymore until it's like completely vetted. I certainly don't trust anything that would be considered from the left, any fact checker organization or study about, you know, hydroxychloroquine or whatever. I just don't believe any of it anymore. I don't like living in that space. I don't think it's any different than, you know, I have lots of arguments with Mike August, and when I'm done, I go, okay, I'm going to have to check this. I got to figure it out because I don't trust you. I don't believe you. You're so inaccurate that I have to do that. I don't like that relationship with my friend. Many have it with spouses and other people in our world where they just start saying something and you're thinking as they're saying it, well, okay, I'm going to have to vet this because you're so inaccurate. I don't want that relationship with CNN, but we all do it on a micro level. You know what I mean?
You're actually bringing up something interesting you and I have not talked about. And I've noticed this in medicine, which is the same thing you're complaining about, which is that the practitioner's impression, our experience, what we think about it, the way you're saying, has no value. Everything has to be evidence-based. And they put an absolute, complete trust in things like randomized controlled trials. It's worth reminding people that randomized controlled trials have only been around for 75 years. And most of them are underpowered. There are not enough individuals in the study to actually conclude the things they're hoping to conclude. They're just not enough, big enough study population. So physician, for instance, impressions should mean a lot. And by the way, before the RCTs, before the randomized controlled trials, that was what prevailed, was the clinician's impression. And then they taught one another what their impressions were. And we've just completely devalued that.
Yeah, well, I think the New World Order is you better go find out for yourself, which is what all these people are constantly telling you not to do. But I don't really see any other choice. I think kind of the first thing is there's a combination of two things you have to think about. You have to think about memory and you have to think about kind of logic, you know, and people try to tell me illogical things all the time. And whenever they try to tell me things that go against logic or math or even my memory, not many others, I stop. So I had this situation today on my show where producer Chris Loxamana was telling me before the show, he said, oh, here's some news stories I want to go over. And he was in the other room just reading them, and I was doing what I do, which is I sort of stand and listen. I don't do that well if I read over your shoulder. I'm much better off sitting down and closing my eyes while you tell me something, you know?
Yeah.
And then he said, oh, there's a Florida club, a Cars and Coffee Club. And Cars and Coffee Club has outlawed modern-day muscle cars. They don't want those guys hanging around at their Cars and Coffee Club, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's what he told me. And then I thought, well, it's a Cars and Coffee Club. Now, why would you outlaw modern-day muscle cars? And then I realized that a lot of those guys driving those Dodge Challengers and Chargers and that around town, the modern-day ones, you know, they go speeding by you on the freeway and they make a ton of noise. You're dealing with a jack-off group of assholes who are idiots, douchebags. They're douchebags. Anyone who buys a modern Dodge and they worship at the altar of Vin Diesel. Okay, I get it. You don't want those douchebags.
Jack-off douchebags. Got it.
Right. So I was making, so you know, he was saying to me that there's a Cars and Coffee Club in Florida and they're outlawing muscle cars, modern day muscle cars. So then I thought, I broke it down and I thought, I get it. I know who these guys are. They don't want them there. And by the way, the cars aren't that interesting because they're 3 years old, right?
Yeah.
So then when we did the show, as happens quite a bit with you and I and Chris and I, he then goes into the story and he says, and in Florida, there's a Cars and Coffee Club that has outlawed muscle cars, Dodge and Mustangs and, you know, Ford Mustangs. And they've said no muscle cars. And I said, no modern day muscle cars, right? Because can't do a 1965 Shelby Fastback Mustang. You can't outlaw that. And he said, no, just no muscle cars. And I said, well, you told me modern day muscle cars, and it wouldn't make any sense to have a Cars and Coffee in Florida and outlaw muscle cars, because that would be 80% of the people that would show up, classic muscle cars. And then he did what he always does. He goes, no, just just muscle cars. I didn't say modern muscle cars. And I said, well, that, you definitely said it because it wouldn't have made sense otherwise. I wouldn't have said anything. And then he read down the article and he said, oh, yeah, modern muscle cars. So what we're dealing with there, but that's how it goes. But the point is this. I use two things. A, memory, which is, you said, modern muscle cars. But number two, logic. Why are you starting a car meetup in Florida and outlawing a 55 Chevy Bel Air or a fastback Mustang or a 66 Corvette? You would want all those people. If you outlawed all those people, you'd have no one would show up. You have three Miatas. You know what I mean?
No.
So it's a combination of sort of hearing stuff and memorizing stuff, but it's mostly just logic. And I don't understand why more people don't have logic creeping in, because the third time you're going, they outlawed muscle cars. Like, no, they didn't. They couldn't. You have the article in front of you, but I know what they did, because it doesn't make sense.
We know that logic has been under attack. Oh, yeah, his new book. Everything reminds me of something. Get the book. Get it now.
Yeah.
But logic has been under attack. That is, logic is something invented by old white men from long ago, and therefore irrelevant, and everything is relative, and it's all society created, and logic bears no issue.
Right.
Hearing in a
Here's the insidious part. They have the article in front of them, and they're going, I didn't say modern. I didn't say modern. I'm looking at the article. It doesn't say modern. And then you think, then I think to myself, am I going nuts? Did I insert modern to make it make sense?
That's the point, though. You were thinking motivationally, which nobody does. You were thinking, modern muscle cars. Oh, they're motivated because they don't want the jack off douchebags there. And you did all the math, and that was that, and it all made sense. But no one thinks about motivation anymore.
Right. Right. And it also would make equally less sense for them just to outlaw vintage muscle cars across the board.
What's the motivation? Again, why would they want that? They want the Miatas then, and that didn't make sense. Which reminds me of speaking not making sense. So there's a new, there's a war on cars in California, right? We have to have road diets, and we have to get you out of your car. And the latest thing that people are worried about is a new law in the infrastructure bill that is going to put a kill switch in all new vehicles as of 2026, I think it is. And the idea, 2026, and the idea is if somebody gets in a high-speed pursuit, you can throw the kill switch and boom, the guy's car dies, which makes sense to me. But I worry about giving our government more instruments, particularly as it pertains to motor vehicles, more instruments to sort of control our lives. I heard a story, I guess, in New Zealand, where there was a group of people taking Kentucky Fried Chicken, essentially to some truckers or something who were opposing something. And they used some sort of kill switch on them, and they all go to jail because they're trying to – I mean, they were technically breaking the law, but I don't know. What do you feel about this kill switch thing?
Well, first things first, you live in Los Angeles. People that get in high-speed pursuits are driving a 97 Dodge Ram pickup truck. They're not driving a Porsche Cayenne 2026 and a half off the showroom floor. You know what I'm saying? So good luck with all the people you think you're going to kill the car with the kill switch, because they're all driving mid-80s beaters and trucks and vans that were from the 90s, okay? That's number one. So
I saw one just recently. The guy ripped off hijacked a U-Haul truck and was driving that around. That's the kind of stuff they
do. Whatever it is you think, the car you're driving today and the car I'm driving today, I'm driving a new car, but that car doesn't have a kill switch. And if that car gets stolen and taken on a high-speed pursuit, then this will not affect my car or the person driving it who stole the car. So whatever they're saying, 2026, you would not see any practical benefit to this for at least a decade, maybe 20 years, when the lion's share of the cars on the road were made before 2000 and 27, you know, so it, yep. We wouldn't see any benefit until 2045. Number one. Number two, I feel the same way about the government and their ability to control your automobile or your funds, like if you're a Canadian trucker or something like that. The same way I do about the previous subject I spoke on, which is studies. You know, the CDC warns, you fuckers have worn out your welcome on every subject because I no longer believe you. And I wish I did. And I would have happily said a few years ago, what's wrong with that? You stop a few carjackings, you know, whatever. Yes, I used to think that you wouldn't use these things, that you would not use. This guy's driving a Winnebago?
It looks like one of the Winnebagos along Forest Lawn Drive.
Yeah, right. Built in 1979. Okay, so good luck with the kill switch. What I'm saying is, formerly I would have believed you, not and trusted you, not to abuse this power. I no longer feel that way about the government. If I lived in Canada, I would not have that thought at all about anything to do with the government or Trudeau. If I lived in California, I would have no belief that they were going to do any of the things they're saying they're going to do with their new technology or their newfound power. I'll file it up there with your Ministry of Truth, who's going to vet out, you know, the truth from the lies and then deplatform people. I no longer have any belief that you would do anything close to that. And by the way, I shouldn't. There's nothing to lead me to believe that you would not abuse this power. We just went through COVID. There's a restaurant 3 miles from where I am right now. It's called Tinhorn Flats, and it has an iron fence around it because they defied you guys and they ate outdoors and you showed up with your Nazi stormtroopers and shut that place down, and it's been out of business for 3 years now. So no, sorry, the honeymoon is over as far as me and trust with you in terms of anything technology, anything to do with any of your data or science, and certainly anything you claim is safety first. We all get it. You always get out of the gate. It's safety. It turns into tyranny. But it starts with safety. We want to be safer. We want to save the children. We want to do a 10-day lockdown to save the elderly with the spread of the COVID. It all comes out as safety. It all ends up as tyranny. And no, I don't believe you. And I wish I did. I really do. Just like I wish I believed the LA Times and CNN.
If you go all the way to terror, I mean, the Committee for Public Safety was Robespierre's committee that brought the terror upon the French Revolution. Committee for Public Safety. It always starts with safety and what's good for you. And then we have to force you to do what's right. It's really bad times. So I need to take a little break here. But hey, man, you've changed, man. You've changed. That's what I always hear people saying about Adam. And yet I've not experienced him to have changed. And one of the things that his crystal brain zeroed in on early was COVID. And he saw the excesses and he ate at Tinhorn Flats multiple times to make a point. But nothing more egregious than the unwillingness to be truthful about the age phenomenon as it pertained to COVID. That young people had almost no risk and very elderly had the real risk, and we should be focusing on risk categories. Adam brought that up very early. We'll talk about that right after this.
You could spend thousands of dollars and dozens of hours trying to look a few years younger, or you can skip all that and the hassle and go with what works, Genucel Skincare. Genucel is the secret to better skin. Their products are made in the USA using a proprietary technology that combines a naturally effective base with non-GMO ingredients. In fact, you might have witnessed the astonishing effects of Genucel during a recent unplanned moment of our show. When just a little Genucel XV restored my skin within minutes right before your eyes. That is how fast these products work.
I know I'm a snob about the products I use on my face. Everybody knows it. Every time I go to the dermatologist's office, there are just rows and rows of different creams. Retinols, vitamin C cream, under eye cream, night creams.
Scrubs.
And then when I get to the counter, they're overpriced. All kinds of products that you can all find at Genucel.com.
Susan and I love Genucel so much, we've created our own bundle so you can try our favorite anti-wrinkle creams, correcting serums, under-eye treatments. Say goodbye to those fine lines, forehead wrinkles, skin redness, even those dark under-eye bags. women and men of all skin types, Genucel has got you covered. Order right now at genucel.com/drew to save 50%, actually over 50%, and you'll get a free luxury spa box plus free shipping. That is genucel.com/drew, genucel.com/drew. You asked for it, and the wellness company has delivered. The medical emergency kit, replete with ivermectin, prescription antibiotics, and more, continues to fly off the shelves. We keep one here at home. And there are three new kits you need to know about, and more are coming. The Contagion Emergency Kit was inspired by the high demand for the medical kits. In that Contagion kit, you'll find ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, antibiotics, budesonide, and a nebulizer. And a must for your next trip is the Travel Emergency Kit, something I made sure exactly what I give my patients is in this kit and some more. The kit includes remedies for jet lag, variety of infections, even GI ailments. Imagine your flight getting grounded anywhere, say even in the U.S., and you start getting sick. You do not want to be at the mercy of the U.S. healthcare system or any healthcare system. At home, we keep the ultimate first aid kit on hand. It has over 20 essential supplies and medications for situations when time is of the essence. Order one for your car and your go bag. Because these kits contain prescriptions, your purchase includes a telemedicine consultation as well as an instruction manual. Go to doctordrew.com/TWC for 10% off. That is drdrew.com/TWC for 10% off all your orders. I'm very excited about these kits. Go to drdrew.com/TWC. Are you one of the millions of American women and men dealing with premature hair thinning and hair loss? Or maybe you're scared about inheriting that thinning look because it runs in your family? Start 2024 with a real solution that delivers results without the harsh side effects or unwanted chemicals and no need for prescription. Previa uses a safe natural ingredient, Procapil, to effectively target the three main causes of premature hair thinning and hair loss. By supporting healthy scalp circulation, the delivery of nourishing nutrients, and healthy hair follicle anchoring to your scalp, Provia guarantees more hair on your head than in the shower or on your comb. Right now, new customers save over 50% plus free shipping. Every introductory package includes a full 60-day supply of Provia serum for daily use, plus the Provia Super Concentrate for faster, more noticeable results. Don't wait. Order now to save an extra 10% and get free shipping at proviahair.com/Drew. That's P-R-O-V-I-A-H-A-I-R, proviahair.com/D-R-E-W.
Very proud of these things. This is one of the travel kits. Please check out TWC. That's everything I give my patients when they travel. Adam Carolla in the house, at Adam Carolla, Adam Carolla Show, adamcarolla.com. Everything Reminds You of Something is the book. There it is. And before the break, are you working on another book right now, by the way?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I was talking about Adam spotting the inconsistencies in the age of patients. How far into the pandemic were we? It seems like we were about 3 months in, like late spring, when you started yelling about that.
I went and looked it up once, I think, because I was trying to get to the bottom of this. And I think the number I have in my head is 8 days.
Wow.
But I told you that I listen to talk radio quite frequently, and they were giving on the news breaks people that died of COVID, but they weren't giving their ages out. And the first time I heard that would have been right at the beginning, because I listened to talk radio religiously on my commute. And at the beginning of COVID, they would give COVID deaths in the news. Every news break they covered something. So it would have made sense that I heard it from Jump Street. And it took me maybe a little bit to process it and to hear the news a few more times and to not hear the ages and for it to become a pattern breaker for me and thus suspicious. So anytime there's a break in the pattern, then the first emotion or the first feeling is, oh, there's a pattern break. And then the next one is okay, what's up? You know what I mean? Right. So it's like, you know, if your horrible wife says, I made you breakfast in bed. You know, you go, your first thing is okay, this is a break of pattern. And then your next thought is, what does she want? You know what I mean? And then at some point the ask will come. You know what I'm saying? Right. Or anybody who's got a pattern, if they break it, then the next thought should be suspicious.
And people who maybe don't know you well don't know that you're like a pattern, you know, you're a pattern seeker. I mean, that's sort of how your brain works. You're vigilant and you see patterns.
Profiles and patterns. Yeah. I just study profiles and patterns.
If you break it,
I'm going to have to ask questions. And so they broke it.
Yeah. And Caleb, is that accurate? The last time Adam was on here was March of 2020, 4 years ago?
That's the latest episode that I have. So unless we got any of them that got, you know, banned by YouTube or something, it was March 22nd of 2020, right around the beginning.
Well, that's interesting because right around then is where my brain remembers you bringing up CNN talking about the elderly people dying and, you know, not being able to play checkers anymore and all these kind of stories they attach to people in their late 80s dying of COVID. I'm sure you remember bringing that whole.
I think that was later. And that was done here for our program. But that was a little bit later, as I recall. But as early as March, I knew there was an age-related thing. I knew it was age-related. And also I have kids. And, you know, my kids at the time were 13 or 14. And I just kind of looked at them and I sort of looked at their friends. And you know, all kind of anecdotal stuff. But anecdotal stuff's good enough for me. You know, it's patterns are patterns. And and I didn't see anything going on. And then when they would release ages, they all seemed to be in their 80s and 90s. And so then I immediately knew it was age-based in terms of lethality. And then I knew that they weren't sharing that information with us for a reason. And then I was immediately, I don't know, relieved. I never thought about COVID in terms of myself. I never really thought about getting it or not getting it or preventing myself from getting it. I had zero thoughts early and often about COVID and as it pertained to me. I my thoughts were maybe you get it, maybe you don't get it, maybe you do get it, and maybe nothing happens. And I had a zero fear of COVID, which is a weird position to have from Jump Street. I really had no concern. I went to your house for Christmas or Thanksgiving and you had COVID that night or came down with it the next morning. You called me and told me. I didn't have any thoughts about it. I didn't get myself tested. I didn't check my temperature. You know, there's a real liberation in not getting too consumed in things you can't control. And that's mask what COVID up. Was.
You put your mask up, sir. Put your mask up.
In between bites. So I never had thoughts about it as it pertained to me. I didn't have thoughts about it as it pertained to my kids. I felt I like smelled a rat, like really really early, like I said, like 8 days in, I smelt a rat and I just went, look, all you sheep and cowards, go along with everything you want to go along with, but I'm not going along with it. I've deemed it a waste of my time.
Yeah, it's one of the strangest things anybody said to me is when I had COVID, like, were you scared? I'm like, was I scared? even severe COVID had about 1% fatality rate for a 60-year-old. But anyway, the diatribe you went on before the commercial break about all the things that the government had violated since we last talked, if it was like 2020, I mean, things are, I mean, I you know, people are always accusing us of having changed, and I always argue we don't, but I think we have changed. And you just sort of scrolled through some of the reasons we have changed in terms of our willingness to trust mainstream media, publications, and the government. That's new. I when I was talking to Dave Rubin, I said I can only trust anything on mainstream media. Nothing, zero. I just assume it's all bullshit. It's sort of Gelman amnesia in reverse. But that, I think that has changed us. Do you agree? You weren't like that already, were you?
No, I never had any distrust of the government. I thought they were greedy, and yeah. I never thought they were evil or had ill intent. I just thought they wanted money. Mm. And I didn't really think in terms of power. I thought in terms of you're born, you get a social security number. So you get a number assigned to you at birth, and they use that number to take money from you for the rest of your life. And right. that's really what they want from you.
Right.
But I never really thought in terms of control. I just thought in terms of cash. And yeah. I was probably right to think that, because the government used to leave you alone and they just wanted your taxes, you know, and as long as you paid your taxes, then you'd be in good standing with them, and they'd basically leave you alone. But the control part was something I didn't think they wanted to do. I thought, well, maybe they had to do it on occasion. If some guy, you know, a Branch Davinian or somebody starts a cult somewhere in Waco or Ruby Ridge or something, you know, like somebody starts stockpiling munitions and taking teenage girls. And at some point the government goes, okay, I guess we got to burn some cash to go get this guy out of here or something. But I thought in general, they wanted your money and they wanted to provide the least amount possible with the most amount of extraction of money from you.
And
that was kind of how they rolled. But more recently, there became a different kind of politician. And the different kind of politician is a little less financially motivated and a little more sort of spiritually motivated. You know, they would like you to be down with the trans cause, you know, and you go, listen, I pay my taxes, but we're done in this relationship. And they're like, no. Now we want to start talking about the trans movement with you, you know, and then you go, I'm not interested in the trans movement. They go, oh, okay, well, maybe we should talk to your kids. And as a matter of fact, maybe you shouldn't be talking to your kids if you're not down with the movement, because maybe you're giving them some ideas that we don't want them to have. And that's where we're at. Now, I don't know why. I don't know what's in it for them. I know it's sort of it's chick-based thinking. That's a lot of this is feminine-based.
Listen carefully, Susan.
Yes, and we do have a lot more women in politics now, and then we have a lot more chick-based dude thinking, like Trudeau and Gavin Newsom, who have male genitalia but the brain of a woman. So it's definitely become a trend, and it's something that I didn't, you know. Politicians were like guys who, you know, they're Ted Kennedy, you know, they chased skirts, they drank too much, they smoked a cigar, and they cut deals for their oil buddies, you know, in the back room. They didn't try to control your pronouns, you know.
Right.
They were on the grift. They were talking to guys who ran railroads and textile companies and shipping magnets and things. Seems like that. And they were trying to bang their secretary, you know, and that's what they did. But they were really that interested in the thought process of the whole thing. They wanted money. Yeah. They wanted a military, you know, that kind of stuff.
It is interesting that the power and control stuff tended to go more towards sex and money. And now it goes more towards wanting to control language, thought, universe, everything about you, who you are.
Gavin Newsom can bang his campaign manager's wife, and that's great. You know, that's a certain amount of control and abuse of power. But wouldn't a real abuse of power be shutting down all beaches?
The parallel economy has empowered us to care for our health, well-being, as well as longevity. Likewise, for us pet parents who now have a place to go when it comes to keeping the family dogs, cats, even horses in the best shape possible. As a dog dad, I'm thrilled to be working with Pet Club 24/7, a company founded by two guys who lost dogs to serious conditions, including cancer. Pet Club 24/7 has an incredible array of products, including a line of supplements for humans, such as the Inforce Plus Corollius Versicolor and Inforce Corollius Versicolor with Reishi. My friend and colleague, Christina Ferrari, a cancer survivor herself, swears by it.
When I was diagnosed, the doctor in the emergency room told me, you have 2 years to live.
Oh boy.
Along with the stem cell, I took these. I have been in remission for 8 years now.
For dogs, mush puppy treats are a fan favorite. Rex, you want to, oh boy. He came right. Oh, there he is. They are also made with the Coriolis versicolor mushroom, which supports their immune system, according to hundreds of clinical studies. Here's Kristen Ludlow, National Vice President.
That strain does matter. We do have the most potent strain, and we also extract it in a proprietary way. And that's why we've been having such wonderful experiences with these products.
Mush puppies are made here in the U.S. There are no fillers. It's non-addicting. Your dog can't accidentally overdose. Go to drdrew.com/petclub247 for a discount off the list price. That is drdrew.com. PETCLUB247, Pet Club 247.
Yeah. You who want to walk on the beach shall be arrested. I mean, isn't that better than fucking your campaign manager's secretary in terms of power grabs?
If power's what you want, that's better.
Banging her is awesome, you know? And, you know, Gavin Newsom's wife hanging out with Harvey Weinstein and having him drop a digit, that's great. You can get something from Harvey Weinstein, you know, you can get some money from him, or that'd be good, but it's not shutting down every church in California. It's not shutting down the schools, not shutting down the beaches. Like, imagine how impactful that is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If your goal is to impinge on other people, and you and I were talking earlier today, how the people on the left seem to be very, very preoccupied with the idea of a single dictator, but they love the idea of a bureaucratic, centralized, totalitarian state. That's appealing to them, which is just bizarre to me. I mean, they're all bad. I'm not saying one's good. It's all bad. Centralized authority is bad.
Right. But there seems to be a new politician who wants it, and more of them. And it's usually on the left, and it's got a feminine quality to it. And so we're dealing with.
And I was freaking out last night. Gutfeld, where, you know, I was saying that this preoccupation with language, and you can't call them illegal immigrants, they're undocumented workers. It, as opposed to your concern for the murderer that killed that young nurse, that's not your concern. Oh, okay. Now I see you. Now I get it. You're an asshole. I get it. You just want to control the language, and you have no concern for the well-being of the people here. And a young woman died, and you don't give a shit. That says everything I need to know.
Yeah. Well, they don't. What? You think they care about black people? Hispanic people, the trans children, the gays, the women in the women's movement. What, they give a shit about women? They want to go march with Madonna over invisible problems. They don't want to do anything that's really affecting women around the world. So the people, Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton or anyone at CNN or Joy Reid or any of the race hustlers, if they really care about their race, if they cared about their race, they'd be talking about education and the family system. They never talk about that. The race hustlers don't care about blacks. None of the feminists or the trans leaders or whatever, no one cares about any of the groups. The teachers union doesn't care about the fucking kids. Are you kidding me? None of them do. Joe Biden doesn't give a fuck about black people. Are you kidding? None of them care. And they don't care if the nursing student dies either. They have an election. They have an agenda. That's it.
Well, and the agenda seems to be their power, which is what's really extra super offensive. It's a crazy thing. And you have had a ringside seat, I think, as you said, with family members who have, come from an early manifestation of this same kind of thinking, particularly as it pertains to things like language, where your grandmother, you were telling me, has, would ride sort of lawed over, you know, her family around the issue of language. And then your poor mom was beaten down, but she had a similar kind of attitude about, I'm guessing, about language as well. Tell people about that. Maybe I haven't heard this story.
Well, I don't know how many, why don't you're referring to a story, but I don't know.
Well, I'm talking about the fact thinking of. No, your grandmother's behavior and your mom's behavior.
Oh, okay. Some stories.
Yeah.
My grandmother was progressive, kind of communist, but she just hated this country. She wasn't really. She wasn't anything. She loved Europe, but she lived in North Hollywood, and she worked at the VA. That was just funny. And she just hated this country, and she wasn't much. My family, none of them were real academics. They all chipped away at some community college degree or some such thing. And somebody went to Cal State Northridge for 10 minutes. Like they were not part of academia, and they weren't part, you know, they couldn't claim Brown or Yale or even Stanford. They couldn't even claim, you know, UCLA or USC. They were way down the food chain in terms of academics, and nobody got their 4-year degree until they were in their 40s at least. But they all kind of idolized it and worshiped it. And, you know, my grandmother would say, I have a friend, Emory Kenrick, he's a professor at UCLA. Like, you know, when they called someone a professor, or taught this, or he worked at UCLA or something, it was like with great authority and reverence, you know, so it was a lot of that talk. And then my grandmother corrected everybody on whatever words they chose. She even told me that I was pronouncing hors d'oeuvre wrong. That the correct pronunciation was hors d'oeuvre.
Oh, hors d'oeuvre. It's like a sitcom episode.
You know, it was funny. Penn Jillette used to be a blowhard. Now he's kind of grown out of it. But when we did Celebrity Apprentice and some group, I don't know which team, called themselves Forte, he kept telling everyone it's pronounced Fort. And he kept saying it. But it's a hallmark of a blowhard, right? And it's a way to sort of govern their intelligence to not govern it. It's a way to kind of dangle it above you, you know, so I know more than you, I'm smarter than you. And it's a way to get people off balance all the time, because they're scared they're going to misspeak or mispronounce. That's all pronouns are. You know, you screwed up and you called someone him instead of we or them or something like that. It's all just an excuse to lord something over you, get you off balance, and then at some point take some power or pound of flesh or whatever it is. That's all that is. And that's why everyone should have resisted very early, but they didn't resist. They asked people what their pronouns were.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was one of them. I would go, oh, I don't want to look, what everybody wants, I don't care, you know, until
pronoun doesn't mean anything. Pronouns means nothing. It's inherently confusing. And we all should have said, fuck that from Jump Street, but we didn't. And now it's become ubiquitous that I've told you this, Drew, it cracks me up so much. My kids' high school, the name of the team are the Titans. And no, I'm sorry. The name of the team are the Spartans.
Spartans,
yes. And whenever the most lethal fighting force history has ever known, but the principal gives his pronouns after the Spartans logo. And I just go, what a pussy. Jesus Christ, has everyone got beat into this? And by the way, this pussy started giving his pronouns when he was 51. You know what I mean? Is this really part of his thing? So I keep saying to everyone, you're really into the trans movement? How come I didn't hear jack or shit from you and I've known you for 30 years? How come? I've known you for 30 years. Now the transgender movements? That's you're wearing that on the edge of your sleeve?
Yeah.
Fucking idiots. You know, they don't realize how mushy their brain is and how sad they are.
Well, that, I mean, that's sort of the thing you've been saying from the beginning about COVID, where people were caving into something that they never should have caved into. Look at this. She has to put up a disclaimer in case we get canceled here because of Adam's rhetoric. But it is so crazy. I think we learned something during all this. I do. I think, like, when you were calling people pussies and cheap and stuff at the beginning, there was outrage, and now people are like, Yeah, that's what happened. You know what I mean? I feel like they've sort of come around a little bit to your way of seeing what was happening.
Oh yeah, I agree. There's, you know, you can only be wrong for so long and get lied to for so long before you sort of start to tack back toward sanity at some point, right?
God, I hope so. You know, I want to circle back to Penn Jillette. I had a conversation with him. I want to believe that I softened some of his, what you call, blowhardiness. He was, he and I were in this Adam Sandler movie just for a cameo thing, and we were in the same scene. And he was very defensive with me, and he goes, I lived in Greenfield, which is the next city over from Amherst. And he had this, Teller went to Amherst College. He went to the same college I went to. And Penn, because he was a townie, had this like inferiority thing. And he was telling me, you know, how we, these students, we were so conceited and all this stuff. And I said, Penn, I was 19 years old. I felt like shit. I was depressed. I knew who I was. What do you mean? The townies were cool to us. Are you kidding? We were stuck in this ivory tower. We didn't know what was going on. And it like a light went off for him he and I never talked about it since. I should ask him whether it was as vivid as it looked like it was for him. And I always hope that sort of softened him a little bit, because if you wear your adolescent biases on your sleeve and maintain them through your life, you're going to be detached from reality. Because every adolescent is fucked up and doesn't know what's going on. It's like, you know, it's just whatever. This is why some of the victim stuff and all the things that people are blaming now, they're really remembering something that happened to them when they were 17. Every 17-year-old has an experience. It's our own versions of it. Yeah, we can do better, but you can't carry that forward. If you're continuing to have stuff in an adulthood that's recurrent, okay, got it. But to really see it all through the prism of a 17-year-old or a 19-year-old, giant mistake, huge mistake.
Well, that's, and I love Penn too. As well. Yeah. I mean, that's all it is people got victimized or convinced they were a victim, and they're just sort of reliving their trauma, and it just goes on and on and on. And the courts sort of, you know, I mean, this is the problem with, you know, believe all women. It's like, are you fucking nuts? That's the worst idea ever, to believe all blacks, believe all Hispanics, believe all men, believe all chupacabras. What are you talking about? It's case by case all the time. Right. What do you mean believe all? That's insane.
Yeah. No, that's right. I was with Luis Gomez last night from the Legion of Skanks, and he was on your mom's house talking about what a liar he is. So should we believe him all the time? I people lie. They do. It's crazy. But the last topic I want to get into, at least briefly, is narcissism, and how really everything we talk about leads back to narcissism. When Adam and I talk on the Adam and Drew show, we inevitably are talking about projection and defensiveness and envy and grandiosity and, you know, seeing the world through the prism of your own narcissistic lens, and then all the shitty things that happen as a result. I mean, you name almost anything that people are complaining about these days on both sides, whether it's right or left, doesn't matter, you'll find some kind of narcissism. And you and I were talking with Chris Laxamana today about how entitlement seems to be measurably something that's associated with paranoid thinking and conspiratorial thinking. I think it's really grandiosity, that grandiosity and then narcissism is really what's under that. narcissism, what leads to the envy, it's what leads to the mob action, it leads to the feeling of victim and being, you know, little on the inside, but, you know, gathering things from the outside to buttress yourself against those feelings of inadequacy. It's all narcissism. Your grandma was a narcissist and an early adopter, but now we have narcissists all over the place. My last question is sort of, what do we do about it? What, do we just start pushing back? Will that be sufficient? Do we have to gather together a show of force? Do we have to wait until everyone dies out, until a new historical sort of personality trend moves in? What are your thoughts?
I do not put a lot of stock in changing people that are already narcissists, because that means there's three things. You know, you have to be a narcissist, and there's plenty of them. You have to have enough sort of brain horsepower to get you out of the narcissism quagmire, and you have to want to stop being a narcissist, you know?
Right.
And that's a pretty tricky needle to thread to find all three. I know lots of dumb people that are narcissists and have no thoughts about stopping whatever it is, however it manifests itself. And I even know smart people that are narcissists, and they ain't quitting either. It's smart, narcissist, and the ability to change, the desire to change. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of that. I think you are going to have to move to places with like-minded people and surround yourself with people that aren't narcissists in an environment that doesn't breed narcissism. And then hopefully we can start to work on it at birth by getting rid of the self-esteem movement, many of the other things that we do to young children that create that. But there's a whole generation of lost narcissists, and there's nothing to do but wait for them to die.
And both of us have low self-esteem, and we have both felt that that was an asset. It wasn't always fun to have low self-esteem. It didn't always feel good, but it made us work harder, you know, take responsibility for everything, always look at ourselves as a potential source of whatever goes wrong, you know, taking responsibility for things. While if you had high self-esteem, really high self-esteem, and that, again, that's all kind of set between age 1 and 5, if you've been exposed to too much wah-wah-wubsy, as you say, or too much self-esteem, you end up not being interested in changing or taking responsibility, because why should you? Because you're perfect. You're you. You don't have to do anything, and you're just perfect.
Low self-esteem makes you more accurate as a person, because you're willing to entertain many other ideas, because your own thoughts don't have any more merit than anyone else's thoughts. So you de facto become much more accurate. And the problem with all the people who are narcissists with high self-esteem is they do not think Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla have low self-esteem. They think we have very high self-esteem, and that they have low self-esteem, and that they get pushed around by people like us. And now they have to stand up for themselves.
Right.
Except the dance.
That's the insanity of all this. And yet, and we are not being hyperbolic or in any way distorting our experience. We have low self-esteem. That's what we have.
I have millions of examples of my low self-esteem. My whole thing is bring the receipts, bitch. You think you have low self-esteem or high self-esteem, and you ask me about it, I'll give you countless examples of low self-esteem.
Yeah.
Which is not punching myself in the face. It's just low self-esteem.
But, well, to be fair, I mean, you had that ground down during your early years working on construction sites too. I mean, that was
low self-esteem. If you have high self-esteem, you don't dig ditches for 10 hours a day.
Right.
You wouldn't do it.
Right. You don't listen to Michael Stramat with quite the same clarity. No. All right. Listen, I appreciate you rolling with us and our little technical thing. We're going to get this all solved by tomorrow, buddy. So we had little funny, funky camera stuff and sound stuff. But we got to figure everything reminds me of something. Get that book, subscribe, or at least go to the Adam Carolla website and get going on the Adam Carolla Show and the Adam and Dr. Drew Show. Subscribe to those podcasts. We appreciate it. We'd love to see you guys there. And Adam, I will talk to you. Oh, here's Susan. Say hi. Say, Adam.
Hi.
Sorry, it was such a cluster at the beginning.
It's all right. I'm going to sit in traffic. I'm going home.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care, man. For everybody else, Caleb, let's throw some. There we go. Naomi Wolf, Beryl Nass in here tomorrow. Let's get that up there. Yeah. And that should be really interesting. Meryl Nass continues. Meryl Nass is starting to
come out the other side.
No, she's getting more shit, but she's starting to move into the status of Bhattacharya for me, like becoming another one of the poster children of the excesses of all this nonsense. Martin Kulldorff, who you may or may not heard, got fired today by Harvard. Another one that's sort of moving into that position. Christine Anderson, and Naomi Wolf, of course, a friend, and she's been here many times. Christine Anderson, she's the European Union MP who has been raising the alarm against some of the things Adam and I were just talking about. Mike Benz, who's got a really interesting construct of why things are the way they are, after David Cartlin. Greg Lukianoff from Fire in here next week. Peter McCullough coming in with Steph Coulson. And Drea Di Matteo, who is an actress from, what's the name of the show? Everybody help me. Sopranos, I believe. And she has been on a few shows lately, become more outspoken about things. And I talked to her the other day, and she was saying she's gotten herself in trouble. And I thought, not really. I think you get some pushback. But I think her esteem is going up in many people's eyes. So I look forward to talking to her. And we will see you tomorrow. Tomorrow is the normal time, 3:00. We'll be on time. We'll get our technical problems taken care of, and we will see you then.
Ask Dr. Drew is produced by Caleb Nation and Susan Pinsky. As a reminder, the discussions here are not a substitute for medical care, diagnosis, or treatment. This show is intended for educational and informational purposes only. I am a licensed physician, but I am not a replacement for your personal doctor, and I am not practicing medicine here. Always remember that our understanding of medicine and science is constantly evolving. Though my opinion is based on the information that is available to me today, some of the contents of this show could be outdated in the future. Be sure to check with trusted resources in case any of the information has been updated since this was published. If you or someone you know is in immediate danger, don't call me, call 911. If you're feeling hopeless or suicidal, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. You can find more of my recommended organizations and helpful resources at drdrew.com/help.